This is hour three of the Hale-Bopp Planet X Update Special. Once again, the official title, Hale-Bopp, Harrington, Art Bell, Coast to Coast AM, and Planet 10 Update. So hopefully this title is starting to make some sense. Let me just do a quick update on the real issue of Planet X. First of all, there are many, many Planet X objects, and the idea that there is one Planet X object is one of the biggest myths on the planet or in the universe. That has been the crux of a lot of the misunderstanding regarding Planet X and the real issues. In light of that, I have a question to ask. Any of these clowns that jump on radio stations and are talking about Planet X and it's going to be here, etc. I have one simple question. If something, whatever it is, comes into the solar system, how are they going to identify it and say, yeah, that's Nibiru, or that's Planet X? Nobody can tell you that. And, of course, the majority of talk show hosts aren't going to ask that. They just want some sensationalism. They want to fill airtime and leave you, the public, wanting for more information. But ask any of them that simple question. How are they going to tell that this is what they've been talking about? It's like somebody's saying, oh, there's going to be an earthquake. And there's an earthquake, and they go, oh, there was an earthquake. I predicted that. Well, buddy, there's lots of earthquakes. You know, and people have been doing that for years, too, making predictions about so-called earth changes, etc., earthquakes, volcanoes, etc. And they go, in the month of September, there's going to be something, some major event, and they name it off. Well, if it doesn't happen, what they do is they come back 2 months later, everybody's forgotten about it, and they do it again. And if they ever strike pay dirt and it actually happens, then they go, look, they predicted that. Isn't that special? But in terms of Planet X, how is anybody going to look up in the sky and say that's it? And so the other issue is that they are all talking about a red dwarf. Well, let me tell you, boys and girls, the ancients did not know about red dwarfs. There's nothing indicative other than things could be red. The planet Mars is red. It's not a brown dwarf. It's like a terrestrial planet. Being red does not mean it's a brown dwarf. So there's been a lot of just misconstrued information. Sure, things can be red dwarfs. What a red dwarf would be an example, like Jupiter is in a sense a red dwarf, a smaller star, unlit star. And I've always said that Pluto, for example, is a comet. Pluto is more a comet than a planet. Jupiter is more a star than a planet. Saturn is more of a star than a planet. So this argument, this very superficial argument that astronomers have over whether Pluto is a planet or not, is moot point. It's a comet. It's becoming a planet. It's in the stages of development. And this has been proven now by the New Horizons spacecraft, which just passed Pluto and confirmed my basic prediction that Pluto would act like a comet. Second of all, if anybody has a prediction to make, they need to support it with real data. Not like, well, I think it might be in the next year and a half, maybe, you know, and then come back. These clowns, a guy named Bob Fletcher, has been for years using the same story. He just repeats it over and over again and has no information. And all he's doing is trying to sell another CD or DVD or whatever. You know, he has 10 of them now, supposedly. What a joke. These people are clowns. They have no information. They have no scientific background. And that's just one of many. That's just one of many out there pounding the pavement, trying to get people to send them money. If they made false predictions in the past, which is pretty standard fare for all of them, whether it's Marshall Masters, Bob Fletcher, or the whole laundry list now of other people that are floating around out there, if they made a wrong prediction in the past, do they admit it? No. They just wait a little while, duck under the cover, and come back out a year later, and they get put on radio shows, etc. It's just a big farce. There's a term that's used in the alternative radio industry. It's called get the word out. And what it really means is if something's going on, people have to be informed. But when it comes to the term of Planet X or other issues related to the Planet X topic, people go, oh, get the word out. You have to warn everybody. And false warnings are the paramount, epicentral crux of all of these people's worlds, getting the word out. But see, the problem is, if they get the word out, and this is something that luckily James Jancic stressed on the accompanying program interview with me and James Jancic, he said, hey, these people are getting not the word out, they're getting incorrect information out there. And all that is crying wolf. We have an expression for that, cry wolf. And so people getting the word out is really not getting the word out. What they're doing is desensitizing the public against ever listening to this topic again. So no, these people are not helping anything except possibly line their pocketbook, and it just shows how desperate they are. I have spent an inordinate amount of my time over the past 15 years debunking Planet X imposters. I don't get paid for this. I don't get extra money. I don't. It costs me money to spend my airtime, which I pay for myself, commercial-free show. It costs me time, effort, and money, which I really don't need. So what I'm doing is combating a government, ongoing government disinformation program, and trying to steer you, the public. And then I get accused of not getting the word out. Isn't that bizarre? That is so strange. But anyway, that's some of the idiosyncrasies of simply being in this business. But I consider it very important, for example, to do this update, to bring this information to the public, which really brings real information. It's the first real information regarding the topic of Planet X that has even come out. So very important for you, the public, to understand this. Now I'm going to go through some of the biggest myths regarding Planet X. This is a 10 list, and I could go up to about 100, but I want to keep this within reason. Is there only one Planet X? This is the biggest myth on the planet. People go, well, when will Planet X be here? No, there's not one Planet X. There are many. Now, Hale-Bopp, which was the Harrington Planet X, now confirmed, has gone out of the solar system. If you want to know, it'll be back in about 2600 years. Most of you, I think, will be dead by then, and your aunts or your descendants in the next generation, etc. But is that the only one? No. Could there be another one following in on the same path as Hale-Bopp? I would give it actually a pretty good likelihood that there was. And in fact, there is evidence that Venus the comet, which the ancients talked about in, you know, coming out of Jupiter, and what had happened is it was captured by Jupiter, did not come out of Jupiter like Velikovsky thought. And of course, he had insufficient data in his day. But there's evidence, and this is just speculation on my part, that Hale-Bopp and Venus, the comet that eventually became the planet Venus, came in together. And so I made an estimate, and it's in the appendix of my three-part comet paper. I made an estimate that it would take about 600 years for a large comet to nestle in as a planet. And so the entire topic there is, how long does it take a comet to become a planet? In the case of Pluto, that's going to go on for millennium, thousands and thousands of years, if not millions, because it's out there in that Kuiper region boundary, the inner boundary of the nebular ion cloud, which is part of my theoretical work. If you're not familiar with this, you have to go back and read my books. I'm not going to repeat it on this special on Hale-Bopp and comets and Planet X type topics. You have to go back and read those books. So, and that's another point, if you are new to this topic and listening to this, you have to read my books. I'm not going to repeat that. So you have the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book, the Surviving Planet X Passage pamphlet, Atlantis to Tesla, the Colpin Connection, the Weather book, which has a tremendous amount of information on solar system, the electrical conditions in the solar system, comet activity, planetary activity, etc., then the Diamond Principle, then the other list of books that come after that, Comets, which is important to this topic, Water, which is also important, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, and, of course, the Calculate Primes book. But then the other books that are the CDs and DVDs dealing with this topic, I have a two CD set, 18 hours of MP3 lectures, just to give you an idea of how complicated this topic is. The two CD set, which has been out for many years now, it's called the Physics of Planet X and Ancient Celestial Disasters. So that's, once again, required reading, required listening for this. My DVD set, which also talks about my work. And so, but at any rate, let's go back to these 10 top myths regarding Planet X. Is there just one? When people go, well, gee, when is Nibiru supposed to be here? You can tell already right out of the chute, they have been totally misinformed and bought into the disinformation campaign. Second of all, that they're looking for some kind of date. And there also is the assumption that if something was here before and had problems with Earth, had problems with it, that somehow its orbit would come back and intersect with Earth. That just shows how illiterate the public is relative to simple things like orbital dynamics of comets or planets, that somehow it would come back and come close to Earth on a second passage, which is not true at all. So is there only one? No, there are many, many, many. There are thousands of these. They can come in from any direction at any time, unannounced. They can come in very fast and from any direction. So looking to the south is not an advantage. The reason I did that was to follow up on the Harrington study and prove that Harrington was, in fact, looking at the nucleus of what we later called Hale-Bopp. There's people all over predicting the return of Nibiru, Planet X, Wormwood, etc. I'm the one that initiated this whole concept of coming from the south. I'm the one that did that because I knew what Harrington was looking at. So it wasn't what Sitchin did. He looked at a totally different orbit. The orbit that Sitchin posts is totally different and totally incorrect. And the reason I did that was because that's where Harrington was looking. How would somebody identify it if something came in to the solar system? Like I say, they couldn't. How would you know by its orbit? And nobody can tell you that either. To give real information about an astronomical event, there's a very standard procedure format for giving astronomical information. It talks about the magnitude of the object and if it's in the infrared or any other part of the electromagnetic spectrum, which would require a specialized telescope. You have to designate that. You have to designate the orbit. This is the ephemera. This is the orbital data. This is the standard format that it has to be. And nobody does this, whether they're predicting asteroids to colliding into Earth or Planet X showing up in a certain time frame or whatever. Nobody can do this. And so you know right off the bat they're phonies, they're fakes, because people have always asked me, well, when do I say Planet X is coming? Well, I'm not going to tell you unless I have real data. And if I have real data, yes, I will tell you. I'm not like the NASA nerds that sit out there and sit on data. There's an object that's got Earth written all over it, marked all over it. It's going to, you know, on a collision course with Earth, and they all shut up and won't tell you. And the guy that's going to tell you, Harrington, ends up dead. No, those people are a bunch, this is, gives you a level of information about what the world is like today. Also, people quote the elite building underground cities. I'm the one that brought that information to light back in the, I don't know when that was, back in the 90s, understanding that NASA funds were being diverted from outer space exploration into building underground cities. The big drill bit flew from NASA Houston up to Minneapolis. They actually had to get an airplane from Russia, the largest airplane in the world, to move this thing so that they could then fly it off to where they were building underground cities. So, yeah, that's been going on for a long time. Clearly, this started in 1991, and it probably was going on before that. With the bunkers in Cheyenne Mountain, etc. You know, the idea of secure underground facilities is not new. the idea that somehow that the wider scale used for protection against incoming objects, okay, very good. But I've also said from the very beginning, it's a terrible place to be because you have a shaft, some kind of elevator shaft or whatever, to get out of that place, and that's going to fracture. Any kind of Planet X activity that gets close to Earth, those chambers, those escape chambers, entry chambers, are going to be fractured, and those people are going to be trapped down there. Not a good idea. The idea of 3,600 years orbit, I've already talked about that, so that's number three on the list of biggest myths regarding Planet X. It's not going to be a 3,600-year orbit. And we already have a record going back 3,600 years, as I've said. What happened around 3,600 years ago or before possibly was when Venus came through. Venus became a planet, so it's not out there to come back again. So Sitchin's information about 3,600-year orbit, which he claims he got from Harrington, totally incorrect because Harrington changed that information. And, of course, that was scuttled. Now I'm identifying what Harrington was really saying. Is it a brown dwarf? There's no historical evidence that Nibiru was a brown dwarf. If something is red, that doesn't mean it's a brown dwarf. Like I said, Mars is red. On the cover of my book, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, is a picture, a petroglyph picture of Indian rock, petroglyph, of two comets. One shows the nucleus, and one shows it without the nucleus, showing that the nucleus is extremely large. So, yes, we could have Jupiter-sized comet nuclei. If it's coming in on an elliptical orbit and discharging the solar capacitor, I certainly wouldn't want to have one of those coming close by. That would mean end of life as we know it. The whole genetic strain that's on Earth now would be wiped out, and this has happened in the past. There are probably a dozen mass extinctions that brought Earth completely down to its knees, all the way back to the cellular level, and removed the atmosphere, removed the oceans, etc. Mars had that happen recently, a few thousand years ago. Ancients observed it as a red planet, as a blue planet. Now it's a red planet, the dry hulk that we see today. Is Planet X supposedly coming from the south? Like I said, I'm the one that identified that originally, and I'm correcting that now, saying that there is nothing within astronomical means equivalent to what Harrington was using coming from the south. Does that mean that nothing will come from the south? No. What that means is that given the detailed data acquisition of a telescope equal to what Harrington was using, there is nothing coming in from the south, which the biggest part of that point is to prove that Harrington was looking at the nucleus of what later became known as Hale-Bopp. Will it destroy Earth again on the next passage? And there again, I've said, this is myth number six. And this is again due to people's simple ignorance of orbital dynamics. The possibility that if something came close to Earth on one passage, that it would come next to close to Earth on the next passage is very, very unlikely. The timing of Earth in its orbit and the timing of this object in its orbit, it would be extremely unlikely that that would happen. And so at any rate, let's talk about number seven. This is a huge topic that has to be corrected. I talk about this in my book, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes. Pole shift. How many times? Oh my goodness, I'm about ready to puke. That how many times have you heard Planet X and pole shift and oi? Just on and on. There is so much misinformation and misunderstanding regarding this single topic. And excuse me for using strong words here, but it just drives me crazy when people that don't have any clue what they're talking about talk about magnetic or just pole shifts. There are two types of magnetic, or there are two types of poles on planet Earth. There's the magnetic pole and there's the celestial pole. And people say, oh, well, the magnetic pole is moving much more rapidly now than it used to. Yeah, it's on a beeline up towards the celestial pole. That's exactly what it should be doing after about 3,600 years ago. There was an actual celestial pole shift on planet Earth. It may have been longer ago. And that's when Comet Venus came through the solar system. And there again, the timing on this is very difficult to determine. That's what Velikovsky was trying to do, was put a date on that. And I'm not saying it was 3,600 years ago. I would never put a specific date. But given a better dating scheme, I would go along with what Velikovsky did. And it might have been 10,000 years ago. I don't know. I don't put dates on things. It's just a simple estimate, that's all. And at that point, yes, Earth did have a major pole shift. That's where the celestial pole or the rotational pole used to be in the part of the North American continent that we now call Ontario, north of the state of Michigan. That's where the old North Pole used to be. So the migration of the magnetic pole, which used to be aligned with that, has been constantly meandering north up through Hudson Bay, through the islands north of Hudson Bay, and up to through the Bering Strait and up to the North Pole, and it's wandered all over. Now it's on a beeline and it's moving much more quickly up to the North Pole. And so what is this magnetic field? Well, there again, I explain this in my Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes book. It is a combination of fields. In the center of the Earth, obviously, Earth has a central core, which was the original comet seed nucleus that started discharging the solar capacitor who knows how many billions of years ago, and building up and eventually building up the entire surface up to the Earth that we see today, probably going through this stage many times in the past and regenerating. And Earth could go through this stage again in the future, building up more layers, building up more water, etc. But the pole that existed up to probably 10,000 years ago was in the state of Ontario, the province of Ontario, north of the state of Michigan. In fact, you can do this, and I've done this myself, surveying the Mayan cities. For example, Chichen Itza is 13.5 degrees off of what we call due north now. And if you take Tulum and Chichen Itza and Uxmal and the other cities, and you go to other cities around the world, you can see that their old grid work crisscross in this North Pole, this ancient North Pole in the state of in the province of Ontario, north of the state of Michigan. And so when Venus came through, it came close enough that it wrenched the surface. My book, Surviving Planet X Passage, goes through a detailed physics analysis of how physical pole shifts work. And no, the Earth does not just jump up and do this by itself. It's a very detailed process, and it requires something from outside. For example, if you were in outer space and you were spinning, there would be no reference point for you to stop spinning or to change your rotational direction of spin. It would be impossible for you to do that. A gymnast on a mat uses the mat or a bar or parallel bars to change directions and to change the spin direction, and that's what we call gymnastics. But if they were out in space spinning with nothing to touch or nothing to grab a hold of, they would keep spinning like that forever, basically, without some form of resistance. And that's the same with Earth. So the Earth's core is spinning on its axis. The Earth's mantle and crust are spinning, and it's on a viscous layer. So if something comes by, it can wrench those surface layers over the top of the core and cause the surface pole shift, also mountain building, wrenching the tectonic plates, which we are relaxing from right now. All of this going on, and plus all of the other, my weather book is one of the best places to look. Also, the book Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, but the weather book, Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun, Earth, Weather, written for the general public and advanced science people also, shows the laundry list of Earth changes that accompany such a passage. But the magnetic field, going back to that, which is explained in detail in both my Planet X book and the weather book, is explained as a five-layer model. The core has a magnetic field, and it's locked into that core. It's like a permanent magnetic field. The surface of Earth has a lot of magnetic fields built into it. These are in the form of permanent magnetic fields, mainly iron and nickel deposits in the Earth's surface. But above that, you have the jet streams are part of the, these are electrical currents in the atmosphere. The ionospheric current sheets, which I've enumerated in my books, there's the equatorial electron stream that goes westerly. There's the two northerly and the southerly, the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere jet streams that are ionic, positive ions moving easterly. These are coupled to the Van Allen belts, which are counter-rotating protons and electron belts around the Earth, high-energy relativistic electrons and protons. And then also the geomagnetic field, which is the part of the magnetic field, the plasma magnetic field that blocks the solar wind that's about 35,000 miles out from Earth on the sunward side. But anyway, that's what constitutes our pole. So when you talk about pole shifts, we literally have pole shifts going on all the time. When the solar wind comes in with a reverse magnetic field, in the inverted sense, Earth's magnetic field points north in the solar system, and when the solar magnetic field comes in pointed south, it conflicts, it basically negates Earth's plasma magnetic field that's out there, and allows solar wind to come into our upper atmosphere, causing X-rays and other harmful activity that can be damaging, especially to people in airplanes or at high altitudes where the atmosphere is relatively thin. And so at any rate, when people talk about pole shifts, hey, let me tell you, buddy, we have them all the time. They happen very regularly, and it's because the solar wind is interacting with our plasma magnetic field. So the whole idea that somehow a magnetic field reverses, and this all started back when people, for example, discovered a fire pit from ancient people in Australia, as I recall some of the early ones. And under the fire pit, the magnetic field was reversed than from what it is now. And they said, oh, well, what happened was the fire heated up the iron, was heating up the iron or the nickel in the deposit in underneath the fire. And at the time, the external magnetic field was in the opposite direction. And therefore, when after the fire was out, the metal solidified, went through the Curie temperature, and the magnetic field was locked in the opposite direction, proving that the external magnetic field of Earth was in a different direction at the time. But remember that if you have major events going on, the magnetic field of Earth can literally be in the opposite direction. And it's not really a magnetic reversal. It's a local condition. So a lot of this is based on the assumption that Earth has been here all by itself for billions of years, and nothing from outside has affected it. And then, so you see many of these interpretations, for example, that somehow there was the Earth had a magnetic pole flip. Yeah, there was a different direction of magnetic field at that time, but that could have been caused by a passing comet during the time they had that fire lit. Okay, so enough of that, but the whole topic of pole shift is really exaggerated, and the idea that Earth just jumps up and does this all by itself is a total myth. So people that talk about pole shifts or wandering poles, etc., literally have no clue what they are talking about. And the magnetic pole of Earth has been wandering back to the true North Pole for thousands of years since it started to be recorded back in the 1500s. And yes, it's moving faster now than normal, but that's really, let's say, it's moving faster now than it did in the past. But these are estimates, and literally the magnetic North Pole of Earth changes on a daily basis. It moves back and forth, up and down on a daily basis. So what they give as the annual average of the magnetic field is literally that. If there's a solar magnetic storm, really misnomered magnetic storm, it's really an electrical storm, a local discharge of the solar capacitor, and Earth is responding to it magnetically. If that happens, then the The Earth's magnetic field is changing rapidly. In fact, you can hold a hand compass, like a Boy Scout hand compass in your hand, and watch the needle move back and forth during a solar storm. So, and that's not the permanent magnetic field of the Earth. That's the plasma magnetic field in the ionosphere and the jet streams and the Van Allen belt, etc. All of that changing, and you can literally measure it in a handheld compass in your hand standing here on the surface of the Earth. So the old idea of a pole shift, hey, buddy, it's going on all the time. We're having pole shift activity. The pole is not some, like some place up there with a candy cane where Santa Claus lives. It's moving constantly. Some people are saying that Earth is already being affected by a Planet X object. Let me see, boys and girls. If there's anybody on the planet that understands this entire concept, it's me. Is there an issue with some planet? Every time that we have a tornado, a bigger than average tornado or something else, is that indication that Planet X is here? No, not at all. Because there are many, many, many other factors. Cause and effect. I often tell people, well, the price of refrigerators has gone up and therefore we're having more earthquakes. That's about as logical as saying that it's because Nibiru or Planet X is here. There's no direct physical link between something being out there and the number of earthquakes going up. In fact, this is being quoted a lot, that there are more earthquakes, there are more volcanoes, etc. The reality is that when you count the actual number and you actually do your homework, there's not an increase in earthquakes or volcanoes. It's just that reporting is better. And the data we have now is there's more data because the sensor locations around the world, there are more sensor locations. The actual reality is that there is no increase in activity of either earthquakes or other issues. If something comes into the solar system, we would typically see reactions on the sun and then solar flaring activity that could affect Earth. I talk about this all the time on my radio show. But just saying, you know, hands up in the air going, hey, it appears that there's more violent weather, Planet X must be here, is a myth, okay? And so there's, you know, if let's put it this way, if a Planet X-type object came into the solar system and it were a big one and it were affecting the sun, yes, we could have potential increase in all of these activities, but we could also have an increase in earthquake activity just because of the normal activity of the Earth that coincides with that. We don't have enough data, and I say this all the time on my webpage. I have actually a posting that we don't have enough data to know all of the conditions locked in the Earth to know and be able to predict earthquakes, volcanoes, etc., and with any regularity and especially into the future. It's one of the big unknowns in all of science, how to predict earthquakes. So to imagine that somebody said is imagining there's something they can't see out there that's causing an increase in any kind of activity on Earth is simply unfounded. Science is not based on speculation. It's based on fact, and that's why when people go, oh, well, there's an increase in McCanny's not getting the word out. Well, let me tell you, boys and girls, I've been a scientist for a lot longer than most of these people have been alive. I have seen more claims come along in gravitational, planetary alignments or whatever. I've seen more claims come along and go than, you know, that you would ever see in five lifetimes because I'm in the scientific community. And so when I do predictions based on planetary electrical alignments or whatever, it's because I have real data. I have real reasons to say what I do. And the problem is this. NASA has, over the years, seen a lot of data come in that it cannot explain. So it just makes something up. And just it doesn't even matter. They get it published, and people have gotten the illusion that this is how science is done. You just say, oh, well, if you make it up and you say it, well, then, gee, it must be true. That's not how real science is done. So unfortunately, due to the fact that we have bad science example, it's like having bad parents that are drunk all the time or something, That's what NASA is. They make up stuff, they get it published, and people think that that's, oh, gee, that's how you do science. Sorry, boys and girls, that's not how you do science. There's a lot that goes into building structure of science and not just what I call hip pocket theorizing that you see it coming out of NASA. So the public doesn't have a good example to know how to really effectively create science. So that was point number 8. Is it already affecting Earth and the Sun? And also number 9, is there an increase in earthquakes, weather, volcanoes due to Planet X? The same issue. There has to be cause and effect relationship. It's like the scientific community saying that El Nino causes increased hurricanes in the Atlantic. There's no physical relationship any more than the price of refrigerators going up. Yet they get away with talking about that over and over. They get the press, they get publications, and doggone, they get a paycheck. And the last thing, number 10, is the Harrington study. This is something that's been overquoted, overdone, and this is one of the reasons I'm bringing this topic tonight between Hale-Bopp, Planet X, and all of these issues, is to finally bring to rest this entire issue of what Harrington was seeing. He was seeing an object about four times the mass of Earth. My estimate is that it was smaller than Earth in terms of physical size, but much more dense, was the nucleus of Hale-Bopp. When it left the solar system, it was more massive than when it came into the solar system, and that's literally what he was calling Planet X. That is literally what he was taking pictures of. That's why all the hubbub about when Hale-Bopp was finally discovered, why all the misinformation, crazy activity going on, etc. I'm going to jump into a topic now that's related to all of this, and it's a topic that I've covered many, many, many times on radio shows. It's called preparedness, and this is not just for a Planet X encounter. This is for any kind of preparedness. This once again, a 10-point list here. Number 1, should you be invited to an underground city? I got a kick out of this. Some clown said, oh, McCanny must have been invited to an underground city. Hey, you couldn't pay me $1 million to go to an underground city, okay? It's the last place I would want to go to. And if somebody gave me a ticket, I would laugh at them. I'd throw it back and spit in their face. Underground city, bad place to be, no question about it. I've always said I wouldn't want to be any more underground than I could dig out with my bare hands in 15 seconds. That's as far underground as I want to be. Number 2, coastlines. Will the coastlines rise? Are the coastlines, being near a coastline, is that a bad place to be? Well, let me tell you something. 95% of the population of the world lives within 10 miles of the coastline. So and I don't think it's a good place to be. If I'm on the beach or whatever, you always have that kind of in the back of your mind, especially if you're on the east coast of the United States. Good grief, if those Canary Island land masses shift off and fall and you have a land shift underwater, I mean, sayonara to the east coast of the United States. And that could go all the way in as far as Pennsylvania. That's how the Pennsylvania coal fields were formed, by those big tsunamis coming in off the east coast, and probably due to the Canary Islands. So anyway, and that goes far back into history. That's nothing new, nothing that would be related to Planet X, other than a close passage of a large object could essentially trigger that, obviously. But that's not necessary. Those things are happening by themselves all the time. So at any rate, ocean levels rising, yeah, absolutely. And you can, there are actual maps that you can do this. You can take and raise the ocean level a foot or 5 feet or 10 feet or 100 feet. The other thing you can do is take that ocean level and drop it down 10, 50, 100, 200, 600 feet. And see what the world was like before. And what you see is the continental shelves that are around the planet, especially the eastern United States, the entire continental shelf there, and then around Florida and around through the Gulf of Mexico, etc. That continental shelf used to be land above the ocean before the last great flood. The Noah's flood raised that water level. And, you know, I always thought that this idea that Atlantis went under the ocean, the ancients possibly were not savvy enough to understand that going under the ocean, which we consider like maybe an earthquake or a fault in the continent of Atlantis sunk under the ocean, you know, that's our image of this. But how about the ocean level rising in Atlantis went under the ocean? That's another possibility. And of course, Atlantis already having been discovered in the South China Sea. My book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, talking about that. Preparedness number three. So number two, once again, yeah, if you want to build camp, a permanent place to live, a eco-village or whatever you want, on the ocean, probably not a good choice. Or back in a way where, you know, the tsunamis. Remember that the ancient tsunamis, they found shells, seashells, up at the top, very top of the Andes Mountains. So I don't think when it comes to tsunamis, I don't think anybody's safe from tsunamis. Being in the center of a continent, in the book The Colburn, they talk about the ocean being picked up and drawn across the land. In the Mayan myths, they also talk at the Popol Vuh. They talk about the Quetzalcoatl taking the oceans up on its back and drawing it across the land and devastating the populations. Preparedness number three, is there such a thing as a safe place or a safe place map? Well, if all you do is increase the amount of ocean level, then to know where the mountains would be up to a certain level. But really, when it comes down to it, if there's a big Planet X object coming into the solar system, hey, buddy, you know, more than likely you're going to end up dead, okay? Chances are the number of people that would survive, if any, would be small. And so, but there are various levels of effects. If something, this once again comes down to action and a distance. Not all Planet X objects are going to do in the Earth and cause vast flooding. They could cause action at a distance where that would take down the infrastructure. If the world electrical infrastructure were taken down, estimates are that the population of the Earth wouldn't last more than a week. You know, you couldn't pump water, you couldn't move, all of the modern conveniences, all the infrastructure would not work, and food, people would not have access to food. Literally, the world would be a different place within 1 week if we had a comet that caused a solar flare or a comet that caused a direct electrical discharge to Earth just passed by, maybe caused some other types of damage, minor damage, but just enough to take down the electric grid. Hey, society is going to be devastated. So, number four, secret societies. Will they emerge again? Yes. If societies are already building for the ability to go underground or whatever and survive and come out again and rule using the same rule book of fiat money, of interest, of credit, of destroying economies, how to come into an economy, destroy it, get people basic values, family values destroyed. Yeah, secret societies, will they emerge again? Yeah, you have to be very vigilant of them as we have to get rid of them today, the ones that are controlling the world. Number five, preparedness. Water, food, seeds that are not genetically modified seeds. Eco-villages, communities. Community is very important. Having people who are community-minded and can handle living within a community and not people who are all tied up into their own baloney. And, yeah, exactly. You need real people if you're going to have an eco-village or a civilization that survives. So in terms of water, gravity water filter with a minimum of 20 elements, freeze-dried food, seeds, etc. Here's something that not many people think about. The calendar and time. And I have two items which are very much designed for this entire topic. The idea of calendars in my pamphlet, Surviving Planet X Passage, there is a dissertation in there in plates and information on how to build a calendar with a pile of rocks. So this is a clock calendar using a pile of rocks. And then later, I developed what I call the Emergency Survival Recalendar Sunstar Clock. It's actually a product available on my webpage and a very reasonable price, $39.95 plus shipping. But it is basically a plate that allows you to recalendar and build a clock using the stars or the sun or both, and project the calendar out to hundreds of years into the future or go back into the past. And even if there's a pole shift, so understanding time and calendar, the planting season, etc., when to move your group, what time of year, if there's a pole shift, what's the new calendar look like, etc. And then off-grid, that's something I'm working on right now. There's a tremendous amount of interest in the third world and in the eco-village world with my wing generator project to completely get people off of the grid, energy independence, because unless you have electrical energy, you're literally going to be going back to the cave ages, buddy, and digging up the dirt with your hands, maybe a horse or an ox if you're lucky. Also have hand tools and things to trade. Also have shoes. I don't care if you walk around naked, you better have some shoes on your feet, and good shoes, because and you're not going far. Let me just put it that way. Clothes you can make out of anything. You can structure almost anything, but shoes, good shoes that are going to get you through the first 5-10 years are imperative. So anyway, that's point number 5 on preparedness. Number 6, no dependency on the government, banks. Understand that you need a verbal history and a written history if possible. Understanding the real history of the world and the things that have gone wrong. And that's what the Colburn is. The real Colburn, available from the Chaldean Trust in New Zealand. And it's available still in Australia. Get the real Colburn, K-O-L-B-R-I-N. There's a link on my webpage. Also, my books, The Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, a very important interpretation of that book. And avoid number 7, preparedness, avoid false prophets. There's tons of opportunists, wannabes, crackpots, government disinformation agents. And in your group, make sure that you've known everybody really for all of your life. Don't let new people into your group. Be very, very skeptical of people that come into your group and want to join and help out. Very likely a plant from afar. The government is very, very concerned about groups going off on their own and becoming independent, because guess what? Then they're no longer dependent on the government. And if too many people see them becoming successful, they're going to drop away and become members of groups like that also, destroying the control of the psychotic world leaders. Number 8, news media. Avoid the news media at all costs. Number 9, government planned events that coincide with real events. I've talked recently, and in the Joyce Riley Show, which accompanies this 4-hour series, I gave a laundry list of what the Tier 1 scientists can do to simulate naturally occurring events, all the way up to asteroids colliding into Earth. And the one thing that they cannot do is control the big Planet X-type objects. That's why they're deathly afraid of you understanding the real story about Planet X and the Planet X topic, because it's the one thing that would take all of you in a New York second and turn your attention on yourselves and away from the government bank controllers. Number 10, preparedness. A mild Planet X encounter would be the best thing for this world. The greedy of the world would die off very quickly and they would lose their power, because all of the things they use to maintain that power would be lost. And hey, buddy, they'd have to go out there and dig in the dirt and raise crops just like you. So a mild Planet X encounter might be the best thing for this world. I'm going to talk a second about verifiable astronomical data. seeing large distant objects faint only in the infrared or surrounded by a dust cloud is extremely, extremely difficult. That's why they're having so much problem locating these large Planet X objects out in the Kuiper Belt region, because that gets out into the what I call the nebular ion cloud. So these objects are literally surrounded by faint dust clouds. Very, very difficult to see. The actual object is hidden, so that blocks the sunlight from getting back to the main object. So you need a very specialized telescope to see this in the infrared, and they move very slowly. So NASA has actually put up a telescope of this type, but of course they're not letting out any of the data. So to see a large Planet X type object out in the Kuiper region where most of them exist is very, very difficult. Once these objects, say, they kick another smaller object into the solar system beyond Uranus, Neptune, beyond Pluto, and into the solar system, then they start to act like comets, discharging the solar capacitor, and then they become potentially visible. Not all of them are going to hit Earth. In fact, the possibility of something coming close to Earth is extremely remote, because if you looked, let me give you an example. Earth, okay, let's say is 1 inch tall. Then Pluto, or I'm sorry, Jupiter. Earth is 1 inch tall. Jupiter would be 10 inches tall. The Sun would be 10 times that, or 100 inches tall, or about 8 feet tall. This is the relative scale of the solar system. So Earth is a tenth the diameter of Jupiter, Jupiter the tenth of the diameter of the Sun. Okay, now let's bring this scale down a little bit. Let's say that our Sun is on a scale the size of a basketball. Earth would be a dot, a speck of dust, and Jupiter would be about 1 inch tall. So I'm just bringing this down by somewhat a factor of 10. So let's say that the Sun is about the size of a basketball. The next star out there would be, let me just say this, that Pluto would be 90 feet away from this basketball. That's about where Pluto would be. The farthest of the original 9 planets of the solar system would be about 90 feet away. And I used to do this on a blackboard where I did... taught one of my university-level astronomy courses. I did this for the students. I would draw the Sun on one side, and I literally had in front of the lecture hall 90 feet of blackboard. And on the in the very far side, I would put Pluto, a little speck of dust. And then I'd say now, and the Sun would be about the size of a basketball on the far left side of the blackboard. And I said now the Sun's nearest companion, Proxima Centauri, would be about in the location at that time. I used the comparison between St. Louis and Chicago. So the distance, if the stars on this scale were the size of basketballs, the one basketball would be in Chicago, one would be in St. Louis, Missouri, and that would be the relative distance in outer space. That's how much empty space is there is out there. And the edge of our solar system at that time, we looked at Pluto as the farthest planet, would be about 90 feet from the basketball that represented our Sun. Okay, so that and Earth would be the size of an extremely small speck of dust. So if something's passing around through outer space, the probability that it's going to come even close to our solar system, let alone Earth, is extremely, extremely remote. And that's the one thing you have to keep in mind, that these things do happen, but they're very, very rare. And so what does happen is objects can be captured into the solar system. They're captured by Jupiter, the Sun, Saturn, the Sun, or a two-body system like Jupiter and Saturn. And then they become part of our solar system. And once they start weaving through the solar system, chances of them interacting with the planets over a long period of time becomes greater and greater. And that's what happened with Venus. It interacted with Jupiter. became a large comet. Eventually, it interacted with Mars, ripped the atmosphere and oceans off of Mars, leaving the hulk that we see there today, and then had two interactions, we are told by the ancients, with the planet Earth. So all of this going on in the heavens, a celestial game of billiards. And so when Velikovsky was studying calendars, etc., he was recounting the Venus event. Now, talking about the variables in astronomical data, when anybody comes along and says they have information or predictions about Planet X, let me just tell you, there hasn't been a single person out there that had real data. Nancy Leader, NASA and the standard scientific community were feeding her photos that I was able to identify, but they were phony. They were fake. They were just meant to try and give some level of credibility to somebody that should not have had any at all in the first place. But what you need, if you are going to present data regarding any astronomical object, if it's the size of a dust grain, the size of a minor planet or an asteroid, the size of Earth, the size of Jupiter, or something the size of our sun, it doesn't matter. There's a standard format for astronomical data, and it's very precise. And so anybody that's making any claims relative to Planet X or anything like that, or asteroids colliding into Earth, they need to present it in a form of the standard format of astronomical data. And millions of amateur astronomers around the world know how to do this. So this is not super, super rocket scientist stuff. It's anybody can understand how to do this. So if somebody's talking about, Planet X, Nibiru, I think it's going to be here next year, send them packing. Send them packing right now. Don't buy their junk, and don't accept this level of garbage. And eventually these people will simply go away because they're not making any money. They're not scamming the public anymore. But astronomical data has a verifiable astronomical data, then can be verified by second and third party independent verification. And that's what science needs. As I've said before, the large comets, the extremely large ones, because of comet tail drag, because it's not significant relative to the mass of the nucleus of the great big comets, these are the ones that are much bigger than Hale-Bopp, they're not going to experience a significant amount of orbital change. The whole crux of the issue is how much material is it accumulating relative to the already existing mass of the nucleus. The medium-sized comets are the ones that will have the orbits change the most. That's because they still have enough gravitational attraction to hold the material that is drawn in, the discharge of the solar capacitor, the plasma discharge comet model. And they have the ability to hold that matter, and that's what actually causes a drag that slows them down in their orbit and changes their orbits. The very small comet nuclei do not have enough gravitational attraction to hold the material as the ions come in to the negative charged nucleus region. As they come in and are neutralized, they blow off in the solar wind, and they never accumulate on the comet nucleus. Therefore, they do not cause orbital changes in the small comet nuclei. It causes some change, but not as much in the medium-sized comet nuclei. And so the ancients used to call comets the lawless ones because they changed their orbits. And so Hale-Bopp was a perfect example of that. It had its orbit changed from 4,200 years to 2,600 years in a single orbit. When it comes back the next time, it'll probably have its 2,600-year orbit changed down to maybe a 1,300 or less year orbit, then 600, then 300, then all of a sudden it's going to, maybe it'll start to encounter other planets and have its orbit changed and become adopted into the solar system, and we're going to start to see a new planet form. We're starting to see Pluto acting as a comet. As I said, that confirms my work, my prediction that Pluto would act as a comet. NASA has announced that recently with the new Horizon spacecraft. So Pluto is literally developing as a comet and developing, it's already a bona fide planet, but it's still developing. Venus etc. So in the next hour, I will be talking a lot about the science of the planetary system that we live in, the planets, Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, the other outer bigger large planets out to, and then little Pluto out there. I'll talk about those. I'll also be talking about Hale-Bopp and some other large comets. And so I'll be talking about the science aspect of Hale-Bopp and Planet X objects and our own very own solar system objects, how it's all related to this central idea that comets, large comets, become planets, are adopted into the solar system, the moons, etc., related to cometary activity.